absolutely nothing, and no one is going to stop us.
What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
And the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, he joins me each and every Thursday afternoon. Mark Latham, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you.
And good to have you with us. How long did it take you to get to work on the train this morning?
Oh, don't talk about it. They're running only every half hour, and then, it must have been an hour and 40. It crawled along, and I don't know what was more painful, the slowness of the train or the lady on the PA system telling us every 2 minutes that the train was slow.
How long did it take you compared to what it would normally take you?
Oh, an extra 40 minutes, yeah. Right. The thing just crawled. It was all stations after I got on, actually. It was all stations the whole way through. You know, there were no fast trains and they were only running every half hour. But it wasn't very good coordination by the union movement. The rail unions did the teachers in the neck because we got to Riverwood and Narwee and Torella stations there in inner southwest Sydney, and the red T-shirt striking teachers trying to come to the protest in Macquarie Street, they couldn't fit on the train. The train was so full that they couldn't get on. So maybe the union movement needs to coordinate a bit better. The main impact on the strike was to frustrate or stop these teachers from coming to the rally.
The Transport Minister, David Elliott, yesterday said the government would spend more than $260 million to address safety concerns from train drivers about the new fleet. That was a backflip. I mean, it was almost a 24-hour backflip, because before that they were saying everything was, you know, hunky-dory, to use an old saying. But there was the backflip, and David Elliott's came out yesterday and said that they would spend more than $260 million, but the union said they wanted that offer in writing. I don't think they trust the government.
Well, it would have been a good idea for David Elliott, spending that vast amount of money, to up front get a guarantee from the unions that the trains would run normally today and every other day. So perhaps they should have nutted that out at their meeting rather than leaving the hapless commuters to suffer pretty badly there this morning, people late for work and missing their duties. It was a pretty terrible situation. So a lot of this stuff is ham-fisted, and whether we're blaming the minister or the unions, it was bloody hopeless.
What did you think of the comment that was made by Classens about if they don't get what they want, things will, and I quote him, get nastier? Those were the words he used. Things will just get nastier.
Well, I don't know what nasty means. I know what slow means on the train. I experienced it this morning, and I'm expecting it on the way home.
Yeah.
But if the union thinks for a moment they're winning friends by these sorts of stunts and inconveniences, then they're badly deluded. Because I can guarantee you there's a packed train of commuters and other people who couldn't even get on the train who are swearing under their breath, hoping the union could just disappear and we can get back to a normal, efficient service. Like, I mean, train commuters have been through a fair bit, in that we were told not to get on the train during COVID because all the COVID bugs were there. The trains have been half empty. I would have thought it's in everyone's interest for a viable rail service going forward to have efficient on-timetable services running that make the commuters happy instead of putting the commuters through agony.
I think most would agree with you. Talk to me about the teacher strike. I mean, I suppose the train strike had an effect on the teacher strike. More than 20,000 teachers were going to strike today, and it was the first time in 25 years that thousands of public and Catholic school teachers have walked off the job together in New South Wales.
It's coming to the end of term. So maybe for some of these teachers it's a long weekend. It's certainly a massive inconvenience for parents in both the government and the Catholic systems. Their pay dispute is well known. Their complaint about staff shortages is certainly justified. But I heard the head of the Teachers Federation on radio this morning saying that when he was asked about, well, if you're worried about teacher shortages, why did you support the vaccination mandates? And he said, only a couple of hundred teachers have been affected by that. That's complete and utter poppycock. In February, the Education Department notified 9,000 active casuals in the government system. They couldn't set foot in a school because they weren't vaccination attested. They hadn't put in proof of their vaccination. So there's 9,000, and that's a huge number. In fact, the mandates, which end now, thankfully, at the beginning of Term 3, the mandates were causing a bigger teacher shortage than the number of teachers actually with COVID or isolating with COVID in Term 1. So the Teachers Federation, in complaining about staff shortages, are sort of on strike against themselves.
Let's talk, if we can, just momentarily about these protesters, the climate protesters, and their antics on particularly Monday and Tuesday. This young girl, the 22-year-old from Lismore, Marley Cooper, she was arrested again yesterday and was spent another night in jail. The government changed the rules so that they brought in, you know, can be fined up to $22,000 and can be sent to jail for 2 years. But so far, that hasn't happened. What do we say about the judicial system? Did you not post something the other day? Was it on Twitter, or I saw you quoted somewhere in reference to saying something about, you know, we've got these rules, or we've got these legislation that enables judges to fine them up to $22,000, put them in jail for 2 years, but so far nothing happens and they get bail?
Yeah, I'm jack of it. I think the judges that have been appointed, many of the magistrates, are as weak as water. They're woke and weak, and obviously some of these magistrates dealing with these clowns are sympathetic to the climate change protest. Why wouldn't you use the new laws, the will of the parliament, the will of the democratic forum, to say, well, look, you people are causing massive inconvenience. Some, you know, they came close the other day. Someone's going to run one of them over before long, out of frustration and anger. This is not how you protest, by hurting other people. Why don't these magistrates and judges use the laws of the parliament to say, you've been arrested now, in the case of the person you mentioned from Lismore, twice in 2 days, bail refused, we'll bring you here, and most likely you're going to get 2 years in jail. Now, that is the only way to stop these fanatics. And the fact that the judicial officers don't use the law just shows you, Brent, we need many more mandatory sentencing rules. You know, I wish when it went through Parliament, we didn't have the numbers to have a crack at this, but those laws should have been mandatory. Take away the discretion of the judges and magistrates and say, for someone who's done this a second time, you do get the 2 years in jail. I don't think the fine hurts them, because most of them just pay it out of their Centrelink. But 2 years in jail should be the mandatory penalty if you're holding up, well, holding a city to ransom. I mean, if you block the Sydney Harbour Tunnel, you are blocking many tens of thousands of commuters just getting to their job and doing the things they need to do to look after their income and their family. And that's a heinous crime. And it should be jail time and bail refused.
One of the consistent comments we've had over the last 3 days is, what if an ambulance was in that line of traffic and they were trying to get through the Harbour Tunnel and they were going to or were coming from an accident? I mean, there's one example where they were putting people's lives at risk.
Exactly. A pregnant woman, someone else who falls sick, elderly people. I mean, the list goes on and on. And that's why I say it would be very wise for the magistrates and judges to think, look, this needs to end, because it will end in violence. Like, if it, there's a rule in society, if the laws of government and the laws of civil society don't deal with the problem, people will take these laws and the matter into their own hands. And it's only a matter of time before these protesters come to grief, when people retaliate. And that retaliation, of course, is undesirable. But if someone loses their temper in a desperate situation, trying to get a sick person to hospital, for example, and just runs through them, well, you know, it's something that unfortunately is to be expected. And locking these people up now, at this point, I think, is in the best interest of their own safety.
Well, if this 22-year-old girl faces court today and is given bail again, we know that she won't see the inside of a jail cell when she really does finally face court for the charges that have been placed upon her, because she was, you know, she was arrested for again yesterday for allegedly breaching bail conditions. And if she doesn't stay in jail, she gets bail again after she's breached bail conditions. We know that the judicial system is just weak, weak, weak.
Well, that's why we need more mandatory sentencing. But how pathetic is it that someone is bailed when we've all got 100% guarantee she'll go out and do it again the next day?
That's right.
Mm. The whole point of the bail law is to stop people repeating the crime that got them before the court in the first place. And you don't have to be Einstein to work out, if you bail these galahs, they will do it day after day after day. They're fanatics, they're imbeciles, and the bail should all be automatically refused. The judicial officers are basically saying, look, I'm bailing you knowing with absolute certainty you'll do it again tomorrow and probably be back in front of me. Now, they are pathetic, and perhaps it's time to look at the sort of characters we've appointed to the bench, because they're not doing the job according to community sentiment, and most importantly, they're not doing the job according to the laws of New South Wales.
To Mark Albo. Albo is on the world stage at the moment, but I see that, is he the Rabbitohs number one supporter? He gave Boris Johnson a Rabbitohs jacket the other day when they met.
Did he? Okay, well, good on them. I don't know if Boris is a rugby league fan, more likely soccer would be his game. But Albo's out there today at the OECD in Paris declaring he's got the answer for the world's energy crisis. Well, I think there's a lot of Australians are hoping that with this grand plan to solve the world's problems, he might start in a place called Australia,
yes,
where AGL has announced that the electricity bills are going up by $300 and gas by over $70. So if you use a household using a fair bit of electricity and gas, you're up near $400 extra. And I think a lot of people are thinking, well, okay, he went to a NATO meeting, he's been to Indonesia, he's been to the Quad in Japan. Maybe the OECD talking about solving the world's problems is a bridge too far. They'd like him back here to solve a few of Australia's problems. I think they're calling him Airbus Albo.
Certainly, someone said the other day he spent probably more time overseas than he has in Australia since he won the election.
Yeah, and he didn't say much about foreign policy in the election campaign, but he was obviously busting a boiler to get overseas and rub shoulders with the big names on the international scene. But I think he'd be well advised to get back home and deal with our energy crisis rather than fixing up Europe.
Speaking of that, you mentioned about the AGL customers and facing a $300, maybe a $400 a year increase. At this stage, Energy Australia hasn't notified many customers that they are going to be putting their energy prices up as well. But all this news seems to fly in the face of what the Labor Party were talking about when they were leading up to the election. The federal government said that they would promise power cuts. The bills would be cut by $275 by 2025. Now, it's 2022. Am I unfair in bringing that up and saying, well, they've still got, you know, 2 years to get that discount, energy discount happening? But all we're seeing is energy prices going through the roof.
No, you're not unfair in bringing that up. That was their promise, and I think we've worked out we've got Buckley's chance of seeing it realised. If the prices are going up by $300 with a big outfit like AGL, they're not going to come down by $275. There's going to be a net reduction there of $575, is there? So the prices are going up. The Labor promise was always baloney. It was never going to be realised for the simple reason that the renewables can't do the job 24/7. And for anyone like Chris Bowen saying, look, the only answer here is renewable energy, they should only be allowed to say that if they've got evidence of what happens when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. Where's the pumped hydro to fill the gaps? Where's the battery capacity? Not that that generates electricity. Where's the gas peaking plants? Labor started out opposing the one at Curry. So if you put all your eggs in the renewable basket, you've got a massive problem of a system that shortchanges power supply. We've got documents here in the New South Wales Upper House that's showing almost certainly under Matt Keane we'll have blackouts in 2025-26. So these are the things that are not being answered. There's expert reports out, government reports, saying energy consumption in Australia is going to double through to 2050. Electricity consumption doubles through to 2050. And we need nine times the amount of renewables that they've got at the moment to cope. Well, where's that coming from? And where's the capacity when the renewables aren't working? That's the major problem. And unfortunately, this has become an ideology rather than a practical, affordable, reliable energy supply for the consumers.
Well, Germany have now said they're going to turn on all their coal power fire stations.
Well, yeah, Germany foolishly ran coal and nuclear out of their country saying renewables, 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 and now they're doing a triple a backflip with Pike. So, you know, well, can't we learn? If Albanese's talking to the OECD and he's right there next to Germany, maybe he can have a look around at some of the European reports and papers to see that the path Australia is going down is what Europe did 5 years ago, and they can't turn direction now fast enough to get out of the problem they caused for themselves. So we're learning nothing from the failures in Europe. We're learning nothing from our recent past energy crisis. You need reliable baseload power. You've got to keep the coal-fired and gas-fired power going for as long as you can and bring in nuclear.
I think I said coal-powered fire stations. Got it wrong, coal-fired power stations. Could I ask you, last week or the week before, you quoted a price in the trillions of dollars for renewables in reference to, I'll call it the hardware, to roll everything out. How much was it? One point something trillion?
A huge amount of money. I haven't got the figure in front of me, but the Labor policy is $25 billion spent in wiring up the transmission wires, and that's only a small fraction of what's needed. It's much higher than that. And this is the thing, it's not just the backup power for when the sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing, it's also how do you wire up the system so that you connect to these new solar farms at the back of Bourke, that you connect to the new wind farms in the New England. There's no point having them unless they're hooked into the grid. And the great promise of Snowy 2.0, Malcolm Turnbull's baby, well, at the moment it looks like the Hume link to connect it into the New South Wales grid will be delayed years, and it may be another 6 or 7 years before that generates a single watt of power to turn on any light in New South Wales. So you can build these things, but unless you hook them up with the transmission wires, and that's incredibly expensive, they're not worth a cracker.
Okay, David Elliott has called on the former Deputy Premier John Barilaro to withdraw his US appointment to Senior Trade and Investment Commissioner. This, of course, is as a direct result of all the controversy. I heard someone say on radio this morning that MPs from both sides these days, and it seems as though it's growing numbers of MPs, are saying the same sort of thing that Elliott is saying. What are you hearing in the halls of Macquarie Street?
Well, we're friends like David Elliott. Who needs enemies? That's what John Barilaro was saying and muttering under his breath this morning. Yeah, Barilaro, he looks a goner now. Once a senior minister like that breaks ranks, Perrottet said a few weeks ago, if Elliott doesn't get back to his day job, he'd sack him. Well, commenting on a trade appointment is not exactly the job of the transport minister, especially on a day when the train service was a disgrace.
Yes.
So I'd like to see David Elliott get back to his day job, but in terms of Barilaro, I'll be pretty surprised if he ever jets off to New York for that position, because it looks like the walls are closing in on him.
I couldn't believe in the paper yesterday, or it was reported, I suppose, as a result of that hearing yesterday, they've already spent nearly $1 million on fitting out the office in New York.
Well, someone will occupy it. They offered it to Jenny West, apparently, whoever she is. No one's heard of her. And then Barilaro was going to be the beneficiary. I might put my name in, Brent, and have a crack.
Well, it'd be a good gig, wouldn't it?
I can be your roving international reporter.
You could.
Everything happening in the Big Apple.
It'd be a good job. At least we, 500,000 plus. Gee whiz, I tell you what, they pay them well. And you were quoted in the Telegraph at one stage this week. Was it the Campbelltown School with the woke Romeo and Juliet play?
Yeah, the parents had no idea that Romeo and Juliet would both be female and engage in a passionate kiss. Several passionate kisses as part of that play in front of 14-year-old children. Now, whether you think it's right or wrong that Romeo and Juliet have gone lesbian, the parents should have the right to know to say, is that appropriate in front of my 14-year-old? A lot of the kids were horrified and shocked by it. Others were yelling out, gay, gay. You know, the larrikins were sort of disrupting the play. So I just think if you're going to do these things, at least tell the parents and they can take the kids out and put them in the library to do some real work instead of, what I regard as the sexualisation of a school. I just don't know why lesbianism needs to be part of that play in front of 14-year-olds with their parents only finding out about it when the kids go home.
Yeah, exactly right. Most of the callers we took when we talked about it, they were on the same side that you and I. I mean, just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Parents have got rights.
They do.
Parents have got rights. And one of the rights is you drop your kids off in the morning as an act of trust to the school. If there's anything controversial or anything that's going to cause concern, it's not that hard for the school, who knew all about this theatre company. They knew exactly what was going to happen. The theatre company said it's a production of Shakespeare, not Shakespeare, Shakespeare. The school knew and didn't tell the parents, and I just find that reprehensible.
Thank you, Mark Latham. And as always, our time is up. We look forward to talking to you next week. Have a good week.
You too. All the best.
See you, mate.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers.